Orrin Hatch was Utah's longest-serving senator. In January 2019, Mitt Romney was sworn in to fill Senator Hatch's seat. The late Senator Orrin Hatch's eldest son, Brent Hatch, has filed his declaration of candidacy on January 2nd. Brent Orrin Hatch is joining us this afternoon here on KVEL to discuss his candidacy. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM and 920 AM KVEL. Welcome to the Uinta Basin, Mr. Hatch. It's good visiting with you again.
Steve, thanks for having me here. Any day I get to spend with you in Uinta Basin is a great day by me.
Brent Orrin Hatch, your family originated here in Vernal.
Yeah, actually it was Jeremiah Hatch, and that was, I think it was my great-great-great-grandfather. Was asked to settle that town, and it was originally called Hatch. The lore that I've always heard is that when the post office came in to assign zip codes, there was already a Hatch, Utah, down by Bryce, and they got the zip code first, and so Hatchtown had to change its name and eventually became known as Vernal.
Is that right? Otherwise, we'd have been known as Hatchtown?
That's my understanding. I wasn't alive at the time, but that's what I've been told.
Hey, that's our story, and we'll go with it. What do you say?
That's great. Well, my grandfather was still part of the Hatches and lived in Vernal. And eventually, when he married my grandmother, who was a Methodist from Illinois, that was the first time they moved out of Vernal and actually back to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And the Mormon missionaries tracked them out. They were probably the only Mormons in Pittsburgh at the time. And my grandmother converted, and the first Mormon church meetings were held in their home in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Wow, interesting. Shortly after your announcement in January, you were quoted in the Deseret News by stating, "You've got to have somebody who can work with the other side and do the type of work like my father did." As divisive as Congress is in our country right now, is it possible to work with the Democrats in Congress?
I think it's always possible. That was one of the great lessons. Having a front row seat to his career is really a master class in politics. As you know, he passed more legislation than anybody in pretty much the history of the Senate. And especially at the end of his career, when he was the most senior and powerful person in the Senate, everybody came to him because he actually treated everybody like human beings and as a friend, even if they differed very much on policy. And that's a lesson I hope I've learned from him. I'm probably a little meaner and ornerier than he was. Great, but I hopefully I've learned that lesson. An interesting story, Steve, is I went after BYU, I went to the Columbia Law School in New York City, and my first day of class, I walked down the hall, and the student boards were all down the hall, and my first day of class, I was welcomed to a picture of my father on one of the law club's boards with a dart drawn around his head and an actual dart stuck in his head. And I was like, wow, this might be a really long 3 years. And as I found out, a lot of my classmates were really quite liberal, and I was a conservative. But I treated them as friends, and they soon found that I wasn't going to compromise on my conservative principles, but that I was a nice guy, and I treated them properly. And so most of them treated me properly, and we got along, and we actually were able to get things done. And I think it's that same type of attitude that I learned from my father that anew.
Where do you draw, you talked about compromising conservative values. Where do you draw the line between compromising conservative values and negotiating with the Democratic leaders in Congress? And did Mitt Romney do that? Did he cross that line?
I think a lot of times he did. I'm not running against Mitt Romney. I do believe that we're due for a fresh face in the United States Senate. But I think the line you draw is on your morality. Line you draw is on being a fiscal conservative. That, you know, one of the things that no one's drawing a line on anymore is spending bills. We're spending so much money we don't have. Our national debt's up to $34 trillion, and it's going up about $1 trillion every 100 days, they say. We can't weather that very long. And if we had had politicians that actually kind of planned for the future 2, 4, 6, even 8 years ago, we wouldn't be in the bind that we're in now. When you have debt, you have to pay the interest on it, and a lot of that interest gets paid to foreign countries. And they're saying that the servicing the debt now is going to be as large a budget item as our military.
Could you operate a household or a family budget with this kind of record debt?
No one would let you do that. You'd be bankrupt. You'd be kicked out of your house. You'd have all kinds of issues. And our government, just seems to think, and particularly President Biden's just proposed a new budget that has, as I understand, $7.5 trillion in spending, and is continuing to spend more and more money that we don't have. And we're going to become a third world country if we don't stop this soon.
Record inflation. This is an understatement. Is hurting Utah families, especially in our lower to middle income families and individuals on fixed incomes. That's our senior citizens. Now, the Inflation Reduction Act was another tax and spend bill passed by Democrats, which have fueled this record inflation. I don't think there's any argument about that, is there?
No. As I travel around the state, particularly those our seniors that are on fixed incomes and people who are in working class jobs, this inflation hits them very directly because wages are not keeping up with inflation and things are becoming so expensive, not just housing, but food and everything we spend in our daily lives, that the standard of living is starting to go down. And that's why a lot of people are really starting to worry about our children and our young adults going to have as good a life as we had. And it's getting scary. And we need to stop. We need to stop the spending, get our budget in order so that, the future of this country is bright.
Brent Hatch, in your mind, what poses more of a threat to future generations, climate change or our growing federal deficit?
Well, it's clearly the deficit. I mean, the climate change, there are so many countries that don't take care of their climate and their environment. We do a pretty good job of that. But most of the proposals that you see coming out of the Democrats in Congress now are to just throw money at solar and electric in a way that is not proven to really do anything. And it's benefiting a lot of the cronies of the Democrat Party and getting them rich. But you haven't seen any real studies to show that much has come of that. And while they're doing that, they're destroying the economy and making it more expensive for all the rest of us to be able to survive and live. And so, we shouldn't be spending that kind of money, certainly not when we have to borrow to do it.
Congress has a very, very low approval rating. I think it's in the single digits. Where does this lack of trust in our government leaders come from?
Well, I think I can speak for a lot of us that we just are becoming incredibly frustrated when we see things like the national debt rising to levels that threatens to strangle us. I mean, it should scare us. Most people are becoming disturbed that Democrats and the mainstream press deluge us daily with perceived slights to this and that special interest group, but spend no time worrying about the rest of us, about the rights of the rest of us. And they really need ways to find ways to unify us and not divide us. I believe our nation's at a great risk, but I trust that our Constitution was inspired and that living by its principles, it'll see us through these troubled times.
Elections? Do American people trust our election system?
I think it's pretty clear that we're starting to have a lot of distrust, and I think that's one thing that the Congress and our state, at the state level as well, need to make sure that there's absolutely no question that our elections are secure. We get one person, one vote. We don't have ballot harvesting. Otherwise, we become despotic. I mean, Vladimir Putin's about to go under election, and They haven't even had to cast a single vote, and they've already called the election because they know how elections go in a country like that. And we never want to get to a place we feel like that's happening here.
Do you think the 2020 presidential 2020 election presidential election was rigged? It's a very direct question.
It's a very direct question, and this is the way I answer it. I'm a lawyer, and as a lawyer, you want to see proof. Now, one thing I have seen, and I worked in the Justice Department, I don't know that there's ever been an election where there wasn't some fraud, there wasn't some malfeasance. The question as a lawyer is, has there been enough proof gathered to be able to show something beyond a reasonable doubt or beyond a preponderance, depending on the standard you apply? And I don't know that that's happened yet. I have no doubt there was fraud in this election, but I also don't know if it was material enough to change the election. I think that's going to have to be a job for historians. I remember, I like reading history, and I remember reading a biography of Lyndon Baines Johnson, and there were always allegations that he had fraudulently obtained his first political office. And, of course, at the time, everybody said, oh, that's not true, rah, rah, rah. But there's even Democratic and liberal historians now admit pretty readily that Johnson stole his first election. So I think it's going to have to be something for the history books. That election has been 4 years ago. We have an election coming up, and I think where we need to put our efforts in making sure is that the next election is fair and honest as we can make it.
Republican-controlled Congress is refusing to fund war efforts in Ukraine and Israel until we address the needs at our southern border first. As Senator Brent Hatch, would you support withholding funds to aid these countries' war efforts until our border is secured?
Well, I don't like it when the press puts it that way, because we haven't withheld aid. I think people need to realize that, as I understand it, the United States government has given, I've heard, is about $135 billion to the aid of the efforts in Ukraine. That is not withholding aid. That's as much or more, I think it's more than the entire European Economic Union. I read an article in The Economist the other day that said it's twice what Germany put in, and Germany was put in the most from the EU, but it was 75 times what France had put in. And so we're being asked to borrow money to put even more in when some of the countries in Europe are slow walking that war, are not putting in their fair share. And we still have concerns on our southern border, but we also need to make sure that we're militarily prepared for any other things that might happen. We've got President Xi from China who's breathing down Taiwan's neck, one of our allies. And now we're in the middle of a crisis in Haiti, where we've had gangs overthrow the government, and the entire country is, going crazy. Are we ready for that? I understand the governor of Florida now is amassing his National Guard to be able to protect the border of Florida, because they're expecting a huge influx of Haitians trying to escape that island. There are a lot of problems in the world, and we have to protect our homeland first I don't know that we can always be the sole policeman for every conflict in the whole world.
A Fox News headline today is over $13 billion in aid, and this is a quote, has been sent to Haiti, has not improved the country. U.S. commits another $33 million. How is this money accounted for, and can we afford it?
Well, I think your listeners should, when they look at any of these issues and ask if the government is doing what it should, they should ask a couple questions. One is, we're borrowing this money. There's no question we don't have it now, and so we're borrowing it. Is this something we want to borrow for? And then two, is it being given with strong accountability, so we know what it's going for, and more importantly, what is it? What is the goal? What is the end goal? What is the result we expect?
Are we just funding the warlords there? What are we doing with the money? Where does it go?
If without accountability, we don't know. I mean, and that's why I say, before any funding is given to any country, We need to know who's getting it, what it's for, and what's the end game. If you're a businessman and you're investing in your business, you usually do it with a business plan that says, all right, if we want a return on our money, and so if we're going to invest this, what will we get at the end? And it seems like too often our government, it's to them it's other people's money, and they don't tend to treat it as a sacred trust as a fiduciary would. And they need to be better about doing that.
As we're talking about the border crisis, should voters have proof of citizenship to vote?
Oh, absolutely. I hope your listeners understand that part of the game that's being played here and allowing undocumented aliens into the country is in many parts of our country, they're trying to use the influx to affect the census count. Now, all the people don't understand this, but when undocumented aliens are counted in the census, they may not have a vote, but they affect who gets congressmen. And when you have an influx of undocumented aliens into areas that typically vote for Democrats, it's more likely they're going to keep congressional seats that they might otherwise lose because of the population changes. And more conservative states with more likely to elect Republicans end up losing congressional seats. So there's a lot of gamesmanship and politics that are being played here. And it's much more than the evening news tells you.
When I first met you at the GOP Lincoln Day dinner here in Uena County, we talked about the Uena Basin just for a minute. What do you think are some of the important issues facing the citizens of the Uena Basin right now today?
Well, the issues I hear most from my friends up there is, the Uena Basin is the energy powerhouse of the state of Utah. And in my lifetime, there's always been kind of a boom and bust cycle, and it's often correlated with who are the politicians that are in power in Washington and whether or not they're pro-energy or anti-energy, usually from an environmentalist standpoint. We have a lot of the crude that comes out of the Uena Basin is a heavy wax crude, which is a very different type of crude than in a lot of parts of the country. And it has, in my view, a lot less of an environmental concern than some types of petroleum products. But I think the thing to remember is when President Trump was the president, he supported our energy producers in the United States, and we were largely energy independent for the first time in a long time. That not only makes it so it's more affordable to us to be able to run our businesses, drive our cars, produce products, all the things, virtually everything in our world, it has a petroleum aspect to it. But it also has a great effect on our homeland security, because then we're not relying upon other countries for our energy needs. And energy is usually, one of the main components of life. Now, under the environmentalists, under President Biden, they don't look as favorably on places like the Uena Basin. And they're trying to shut down petroleum exploration, but you still have to have it. So now we're not in energy independent. We're now getting a lot of our petroleum products from Marxist countries, South America, who really don't care as much about the environment. And it's silliness. It really is. There's no common sense to that whatsoever.
Senator Lee, there seems to be Senator Lee and Senator Romney were oftentimes canceling one another's votes because they saw things from a polar opposite perspective. What do you feel? Could you work with Senator Lee, and is it beneficial for us to have separation between that much division between our congressional delegation, or should we be unified in our approach?
I think Senator Lee represents. I think he represents the citizens of the state a little more accurately, and I think it's important. I mean, during almost the entire time my father was United States Senator, our two senators worked together for the betterment of Utah. Now, Senator Lee and I You know, we're different people. We're our own man, but we have pretty much see eye to eye on most issues. I'll even, one of the things you may not know about me, and I think it tells you that I've been a conservative for a long, long time, is I was one of the original people who helped found this Federalist Society. It was I don't know if you know about the Federalist Society, but it was an organization that started by a bunch of law students and law clerks with a few thousand bucks and the blessings of then professors Bork and Scalia, who later became judges Bork and Scalia. And we had the temerity to think that we would be able to change the way the judiciary functions, and we were able to build that organization into the largest organization of conservative lawyers in America. And for most of your listeners, what's important about that is we were the organization that helped President Reagan, the first President Bush, the second President Bush, and President Trump pick conservative judges all around the country, and most importantly, the conservatives on the Supreme Court, which we now have a 6-3 majority, which overturned Roe versus Wade, which is overturning a lot of the unconstitutional regulations that federal agencies are imposing upon Americans and American businesses. So that's one of the proud things I've done in my life. And I've been on the board of directors for over 36 years. And one of our key speakers that we call upon several times a year, because he sees the eye to eye with us, is Senator Mike Lee. So that should give you some idea of the types of organizations that Senator Lee and I already work with that we see eye to eye on.
Well, Brent Hatch, we're running out of time. We appreciate you joining us here. I have a lot more questions, and we of course welcome you back on the air with us to discuss further your goals and your vision for Utah as serving as our next senator. Thank you for Great. Joining us. This is Steve Evans on News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL.